You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Well, we don't have a crew game to complain about tonight on the Massive Report podcast, so we're going to find other stuff to complain about. Let's see what we can find. Ori's here. Alex is here. Sam is here. My name is Brian. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Massive Report podcast. Do we want to start kind of all backwards here and talk about the national team and the international scene first and then preview Miami on Saturday at lower.com? How do you guys want to do it? We talked for like a half an hour before we started and we didn't discuss what we wanted to do. So that's kind of the preparation.
That's okay. We just want to fly by the seat of our pants here, Brian.
Rigorous preparation that we go through every week here in the Massive Report podcast, and we do it just for you. All right, well, let's start with something I didn't see because I don't have Paramount Plus. I can't buy all these things. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. So I missed the Panama-USA game. Show of hands in our virtual room, who did see it? Who am I going to lean on here? Ori.
Of course.
And Alex, who's
surprised?
Alex said before we started that he would be glad to weigh in on something he didn't see.
100%. So I want to hear him first. Go ahead, Alex.
All right, Alex, go ahead and weigh in on what you didn't see, USA and Panama, the 1-0 lost out of Panama City.
Yeah, so first of all, you know, this is we're still going through this crazy COVID weird world that we're living in, and everybody's all about self-care, right? And you know, self-care to me is sometimes, even if you do have Paramount Plus, which I do, skipping a U.S. national team game and not paying attention to the constant whining that emanates from U.S. men's national team Twitter, win or lose, right? Just, oh, can't believe Christian Pulisic only scored twice. What a disappointing performance. He was supposed to be the Ballon d'Or winner. Nonstop. It's never ending. So I took the night off, did not watch the game. But, you know, losing to Panama in Panama is not the end of the world, okay? CONCACAF is weird. You play in a lot of weird places. Travel is even more annoying now than it is in normal times. Home field advantage is probably more than it is in normal times. And so, you know, I know people are freaking out about this. Greg Berhalter still has a very good record. Greg Berhalter still knows what he's doing. I saw the result and didn't freak out. I get some people are upset about it, but to me, it's not that big of a deal. I think we're going to win some and we're going to lose some in qualifying. And this is unfortunately one of those games that we're going to lose, but you know, move on to the next one. And, you know, I'm not reading too much into it.
All right. Well, what I have to ask here, Ori, is why didn't Pepe start after scoring two goals against Jamaica? I mean, nothing against our own John C's artist, but I feel like you should play the hot hand. What do you think?
I think rotation plays a factor. I mean, these guys are – this October schedule was 3 games in 6 days.
He's 18.
Still, even if he's 18, he played 60-some minutes against Jamaica. He probably saw the road game as being, you know, not a game that is sort of a must-win, because that's something that's very common, especially in CONCACAF with World Cup qualifying. You need to win all your home games. If you win all your home games, you have a good shot of making the World Cup. U.S. won't win all its home games because they tied Canada, but they're undefeated at home, which is important. And if they can keep that up in Columbus against Costa Rica and then in Cincinnati against Mexico, then the U.S. should be in a good position to qualify for Qatar. But rotation plays a factor.
Okay.
You had a lot of the guys that rotated in that are not necessarily like the A team. A lot of the guys that we saw in the Gold Cup, like Jossy Zardes, Walker Zimmerman playing, Kellen Acosta, who didn't have a – I mean, nobody had a good game for the United States in Panama. I get what Alex is saying. I totally agree. It shouldn't be a hit the panic button situation. It's one loss on the road in a tough environment where you guys would have loved the end of the game. It's too bad none of you could have seen the end. But at the end of the game, Panama ball boys were kicking balls underneath the stands so the U.S. couldn't get the ball for throw-ins, throwing other balls onto the field. So there were like 3 balls on the field during stoppage time.
Oh, my goodness.
Fans were rushing the pitch. Fans were rushing the pitch and these balls were getting kicked under the stands. There was already 7 minutes of added time and the referee added like an extra 30 seconds.
That's how you do it. That's the dark arts. I mean,
that's what I, yeah.
if you've listened to this podcast at all in the past 10 years, you've probably heard me consistently say that's the best thing about soccer. You know, if I were a ball boy, I would be doing the same thing. In fact, I think the Crew ball boys should do that in our games too. When we're up a goal and it's getting into stoppage time.
We don't have any more ball boys or gals.
Ball boys have been eliminated.
Sam, we got to bring them back. We got to bring them back. Bring back the kids.
They were also called the ball kids.
Okay, right, ball kids.
Here's what I tweeted from the Massive Report account saying any Nordeca fan or American Outlaw in the North Stand on Wednesday, if a ball gets kicked to you, pump it out of air and throw it into the Scioto River. That's the strategy.
Now, here's what you do. Okay. You go to Betty's before the match and you recruit, I don't know, a dozen people and you get them good and liquored up and then you take them over and they're the ball people.
I love it.
God knows what's going to happen.
I bet you won't throw that ball. I dare you. I dare you to throw that ball back on the pitch right now. Right now. There's already one out there. Throw another. I dare you. They'll do it.
Wow. Well, I missed all that already.
Yeah. That was the best part of the game, if I'm being honest. That was the most entertaining part.
Yeah. So it wasn't a good effort overall.
No, I think the main storyline of the day from a United States perspective, it's just you just didn't see the lack of effort. It reminded me a lot of some of the Crew games we've seen this season, where you go from one performance at home in Austin against Jamaica, the team looks lively attacking, a little bit more creative in the second half, and then against Panama for 90 minutes, you just didn't see that attacking flair. Jossie Zardes didn't really have his best performance. I think he had 15 touches the whole game. He didn't even get a shot, and he kind of nudged the ball in the net for the Panama goal. He was sort of in front of Matt Turner on a corner. The Panama guy headed it on goal, but it hit off of Jossie and went in the net. But this is not a panic button situation. Greg Berhalter's got the whole World Cup qualifying cycle to basically get the United States into the top three. I'm still confident they can get into the top three, but with how well Panama's been playing, Costa Rica got a big win against El Salvador in the last match day. Teams are starting to find their form. It's starting to get a little bit more competitive.
Yeah, well, the top five teams are all, especially teams that you have to be concerned about. And again, Jamaica just never showed up for this particular qualifying cycle, and they're pretty much out of it. Looking ahead, we have Costa Rica tomorrow night at lower.com. And as you say, they got a big win. They need another win. They're going to come out desperate. How do you see them approaching this?
I'd say they'd go pretty aggressive. The big conversation surrounding the Costa Rica squad, I was in the Zoom meeting with Greg Berhalter on Tuesday afternoon. And a lot of the reporters were asking him about Costa Rica's sort of squad and seeing that they're more veteran and Costa Rica having a reliance on sort of their older players. They have two players on the squad who are 37 and 39. Whereas you've got an 18-year-old striker for the United States who right now I would say is the top choice at the number nine position for the US going forward. So it's definitely sort of a difference, but Costa Rica has a lot of good quality. Their best player is Keylor Navas, multi-Champions League winning goalkeeper for Real Madrid, now at Paris Saint-Germain. Best goalkeeper in CONCACAF, one of the best players in CONCACAF over the last 6-7 years. We'll see if Luis Diaz plays. He wasn't on the squad on Sunday against El Salvador, so we'll see if he starts or is on the bench to add that speed. Against the United States, I would assume that he would be running at someone like Dest if he plays left back, or even Anthony Robinson or Miles Robinson, depending on how Greg Berhalter plays the back four. But I think Costa Rica will be aggressive. I think the United States will, again, play to the home crowd. I think the most important thing in this game is you have to have a fast start in the first half. The U.S. has played five first halves in World Cup qualifying. Four of them have ended 0-0. One of them, they were down 1-0 to Honduras. So better starts in the first half, score in the first half, that can start building up momentum further for the U.S. men's national team.
You know, here's a guy that we've been missing, and I hope that you can check and see if you're not sure. Sorry to spring this on you, but Gio Reyna, I know he's been missing. Do we expect to see him?
He's been dealing with injuries at Dortmund, so he's not on the squad for this cycle. Hopefully he'll be back in time for November for the big Mexico game. And since
he was so good earlier.
Yeah, he's been great. I mean, realistically speaking, if you're looking at the USA's front three, top front three, it's probably Gio Reyna on the right, Ricardo Pepi at striker, and Christian Pulisic on the left side. That's what I would say the front three is.
Yeah. Well, it's impressive grouping when you have, and this is again nothing against Jossie Zardes, but it seems like that the kids are taking over and it's their time. And they're really at the right age because they're such competitive players when they're still teenagers. I mean,
right.
So you're going to get a few cycles in best case scenario. Alex seems to disagree.
Well, I think we have this tendency as men's national team fans to like identify a 19-year-old, and maybe they're like slightly rough around the edges. Gearing is probably an exception here, but a little bit rough around the edges. And then, you know, we kind of crown them the heir to the throne in terms of like our number nine. And I feel like we've had so many like heir apparents to Jozy Altidore over the last like 3 or 4 years. Like,
I'm not looking for one guy though. I'm just excited that we have this little core of young talent that we can grow with, rather than, well, here comes Bradley and Altidore again, you know. We had to transition.
Good thing Michael Bradley's not there, because he'd get booed at the dot, and that precedent will continue. If Pat's listening, that article he wrote, good thing Michael Bradley is not playing at lower.com field on Wednesday.
Pat Murphy is not listening. He is indeed at lower.com field right now covering practice.
That is true.
Well, when he listens back, I just want to tell Pat that booing is good. Booing players is good, in my opinion. We need more booing, and we need more ball kids throwing extra soccer balls onto the pitch to stall for time.
We need a quote shirt. We need more booing and less wooing.
Where do we see Mexico right now? There was some gnashing of teeth over the last several months down there. They seem to have kind of figured it out. They have 11 points now.
Right? Yeah.
Are they pretty much through at this point before we even get to play them?
They always figure it out. I would recommend for any international soccer fans a great Twitter account to follow. It's called We Global Football. It's an all international soccer dedicated Twitter. And basically, you've got probability charts and spreadsheets breaking down what teams' chances are to qualify for the World Cup based on the matchups, based on home and away, a lot of different factors. Really, really cool page. If you're an international football fan, We Global Football.
Okay.
And they release a chart after every day of qualifying. And I believe they have Mexico at like a 99% chance of making it. The USA is at like a 96% chance right now. So based on the matchups, based on the form and whatnot, Mexico should win the CONCACAF group. There's no two ways about it. They are easily the best team in this region. I think the United States will have their hands full against them in Cincinnati in November, a month from now. It's just those last two spots where it's sort of up for grabs. I think you're looking at the United States, Canada, Panama, Costa Rica, who are probably going to be the four teams competing for those last two spots. I think El Salvador is just not there yet. Honduras maybe pulls out something pretty soon, but they haven't been great of late. Jamaica's just had bad luck with their best players not being available for them because of the travel restrictions or players being injured. So it's a shame, because a lot of people thought Jamaica was a dark horse going into this group, but those are the four teams that I'd be looking at. So this game is a must win. Absolutely must win.
So again, top three qualify. Yep.
Top three go to Qatar, and fourth place gets to play in an intercontinental playoff. So in that scenario, if the United States were to finish in fourth, the best is to avoid the South American team, because there will be a fifth place South American team that is in that pool of teams to play in the two intercontinental playoffs for the last two spots in the World Cup. The other team will be an Asian team, one of the two third place teams in their two groups, and then an Oceania team, which will likely be New Zealand. USA can beat New Zealand. USA, Colombia, USA, Paraguay, Ecuador, tougher matchup.
Okay. Well, you certainly don't want to resign yourself to that fate. We can go along, but really, I think we'll know a lot after tomorrow night, and then we'll reassemble back in November for the Mexico game and so forth. I don't know. I'm pretty confident. I think that they can get the job done tomorrow. I think, do we have a feel for what sort of crowd we're going to get? Alex, do you have any feel for that? Are we going to have a lot of Costa Rica supporters up here? What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like?
You know, I think it'll be interesting. I think this cycle in general, crowds have been a little bit lighter. I think there are kind of a number of factors for that. Number one of which is COVID. Mm-hmm. I think number two is that U.S. soccer is kind of taking the approach that some other leagues have taken, which is it's better to get 15,000 people at $100 a ticket than it is to get 25,000 people at $20 a ticket. So, you know, ticket prices for all of these qualifying games are pretty ridiculous in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think Nordeca tickets were $85, I think is what they were.
Yeah. Like, something around there. There were like some, there were 100 seat tickets at $80, $90 too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, if you're a family of four, it's not an insignificant, you know, chunk of change to go and throw down to see the U.S. play Costa Rica, right? This isn't Dosa Zero. This is U.S. Costa Rica. And it's just kind of amazing to me. The prices, by the way, for Dosa Zero in Cincinnati are even worse. I mean, they are just really god awful. I mean, there are some $1,000 tickets on that chart. Which I mean, unless I'm getting to hang out with Greg Berhalter and Christian Pulisic after the game, I'm not paying $1,000 a ticket to see the U.S. men's national team. Again, unless it's a World Cup final, maybe then I would, but even then I'd have to really think about it. Just an interesting approach. So in terms of the crowd, I don't think it's going to be a sellout. We'll have to kind of see what the game day crowd looks like, but even on Twitter this afternoon, I saw a lot of people offering tickets at face value, trying to find homes for them. So I it wouldn't surprise me if it's a little bit on the light side.
I had a hand in at least the exchange of six sets of tickets yesterday. So yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty good crowd. Just, I don't know if it'll be a sellout. Not at those prices.
Yeah. And I think the U.S. is going to have to come to, I mean, the U.S. Soccer Federation is going to have to come to terms with, like, hey, you're not going to sell out games in 90% of markets at the prices that you're charging. But in the past, you know, we saw U.S. Soccer Federation really prioritizing certain markets that they thought that they could get a really strong home field advantage and use that home field advantage to propel the men's national team into World Cup qualification. And I think now you're seeing kind of a different approach where you're seeing a lot of larger stadiums being chosen. You're seeing ticket prices in the smaller stadiums go up pretty significantly. And it's almost like they're treating these the same way that they treat their friendlies, which is just kind of a cash grab. So it'll be interesting to see if it bites us. I think that, you know, maybe I'm making assumptions here. I don't think there's as large of kind of a Costa Rican contingent that's likely to turn out as maybe there is for like Mexico. You know, I am very concerned about what that crowd is going to look like in Cincinnati and how many of those fans are going to be Mexican fans. And, you know, if it's a majority Mexico crowd down in Cincinnati, I won't be dragging Cincinnati for that. Given those prices, you know, you're going to get the most passionate fans out there. And fact of the matter is that the U.S. doesn't have the most passionate fan base. Even within the United States, we don't. It's a growing sport here still. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, thought, I just hope that these ticket prices don't bleed over into the World Cup in 2026. I mean, it's obviously going to be in bigger venues, but it's a 48-team tournament, and you're going to have games at like MetLife Stadium or AT&T. It's going to be like Morocco against Switzerland, which would be really cool to see any World
Cup. I already have my tickets. States.
You already have your tickets. I just hope those prices aren't going to be extortionate too, because for any fan in the United States who's a soccer fan, it's going to be a great experience to watch the World Cup, and there's going to be even more games to get a chance to go and watch in whatever city you're closest to. So hopefully they look at the price points and maybe reevaluate in the future.
Well, and they could use these games to grow that fan base, right? I mean, they could use these World Cup qualifying games and, you know, the World Cup games to really introduce people to the game of soccer, get them, you know, fired up for their national team and turn them into longtime fans. But I don't think that the U.S. soccer thinks in that kind of long-term vision. I think what the way that they think is really, really short and medium term, just how can they squeeze the most money possible out of every U.S. soccer fan? And that's kind of the way that they move. So we'll have to wait and see what happens this weekend, but I don't think it's going to be the kind of crowd that we saw for the U.S.-Mexico qualifier, last cycle. So I just don't think that's what we're looking at.
So I'm just looking ahead at the schedule, and USA goes to Canada on January 30th. Do we know where that match is going to be played? Are they going to play that like in Edmonton or something?
So most of Canada's home matches have been at BMO in Toronto. But if it's in the middle of January and it's snowing like crazy, then the only place that comes to mind that would make sense is BC Place in Vancouver because it's indoors. Yeah.
See, I just suddenly had a dream, a daydream that I would go to Canada and see that game. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Canada's that would be great. Wild. If it's outside, no, we're not doing another snow bowl like USA Costa Rica. What was that, like 2013 in Denver?
Yeah, we'll have to look into that and see if they decided where to play it yet.
Is the border open again? I lost track of when Canada opens.
And you know, it just keeps going back and forth, but maybe by January 30th it will be. I don't know.
You would think by January 30th it would be. Just something to see, though.
Just something fun to think about. Going to Canada in January? Yeah. All right, well, let's go ahead and do our thing where we make picks for the Costa Rica game tomorrow, and then we'll move on. Back to the crew, the desperate Columbus crew will have Miami on Saturday at the same lore.com. We'll start with you, Sam.
What are we doing now?
USA, Costa Rica pick.
Oh, I think USA is going to win 2-1. And Luis Diaz does play.
Okay. But does he do anything? Does he score the goal?
No. I mean, he doesn't do anything for the crew, let alone for Costa Rica.
Okay. All right. Ori?
I'll agree with Sam. I think the United States wins. I think they're going to win 1-0. I think I would expect Ricardo Pepi to start. I'd expect Brandon Aaronson to start. We'll see about Paul Arriola. He's played like a ton of minutes, and people are confused why. Jazzy Zardes comes off the bench and plays. I think Luis Diaz will play too. Very curious to see if Zach Steffen gets the nod over Matt Turner because it's a game in Columbus. But I think the United States is going to be able to get some energy from the crowd. I think they do get a first half goal because I think it's a little bit more apparent that they need to start stronger. I think they win 1-0. I think Pepi scores again.
I wouldn't be surprised to see that at all. Not at all. Alex?
I think it's going to be 2-1. I like Sam's pick. I also think that it's going to be 2-1 and Twitter is still going to be mad about it and still going to be saying that Greg Berhalter should be fired. They'll find a reason. They'll figure something out.
All right. Well, I'm going to take the USA 3-0. I think they're just going to come out and take the bull by the horns. And this is not going to be a very competitive match. That's what I think. So there you go. I'll be watching it at home. Much cheaper. Not a bad view. All right. Crew and Miami on Saturday night at lower.com. Just looking at the standings here. Miami, after, you know, kind of a push of late, have fallen back now. They are in 11th, 2 points behind the Crew, who are in 10th. Ori, have you had a chance to talk to anybody surrounding this game as we look ahead to Saturday yet?
Any not yet. Thoughts? Most media right now is focused on the USA game, of course. Yeah. So we'll get some more Crew stuff later in the week. But obviously, this is a huge game for the Crew. 6 games left. This one, I think, might be the biggest in the grand scheme because this is right at the start of the after 2 weeks off. You start this big rush of games, ending the month of October, heading into decision day on November the 7th. And it's important to get a win here because Miami's right there in the table. And if Miami beats Columbus, then the Crew go down to 11th place and things will start to look even more dire for their playoff chances. But I do think it's worth noting, you know, we've got all these homecomings for Wednesday, Greg Berhalter, Zach Steffen, Giancarlo Gonzalez, a former Crew center back playing for Costa Rica. But I think Saturday might be the most special because Federico Higuain is coming back to Columbus, his first game back in the city since he left the club. So I hope they do something special for him. I think he'll play. I think he comes off the bench. He's actually been somewhat of a factor for Inter Miami with his brother, of course, Gonzalo. They've had a good tandem together. Miami of late has played really well recently. They're keeping themselves in the discussion for the playoff position while playing really well recently. They've lost their last 5 games after beating the Crew and then beating Toronto. They've been playing better, but defensively things have gotten really bad. They lost 4-0 to the Red Bulls and then lost 5-1 to Nashville, both at home.
And their coach, Phil Neville, after the Nashville game was calling for a massive investigation of MLS officials, which after they were drubbed 5-1 by Nashville.
Which is ironic because I think Phil Neville, after the Crew Miami game at Drive Pink Stadium by Avowal Stadium, was discussing how Caleb Porter was very, very angry at the officials. And Phil Neville said that Caleb Porter like accused an official of like wearing a Miami jersey underneath his official jersey. And he said that after the win. We never really broached the subject ever. I just saw it in passing from a couple of Miami reporters after that game. But yeah, I think it's just interesting to see something like that happen. But Miami's played three straight on the road and have lost 1-0 in three straight. But this is their opportunity to snap out of it in a game where if they beat the Crew, then Miami's playoff chances are significantly higher than the Crew's.
Yeah, well, I mean, their form, though, of late, I mean, if the coach is that vociferous about blaming the officials, that just to come out and call for a massive investigation. But what's this guy's story? Do we know Phil Neville? What do we know about him? He sounds like kind of a character.
He's Gary Neville's less talented younger brother, right? Older brother? I think younger, right?
Younger.
He played for Everton. He was
United.
Like mediocre. I literally think he got the job because he's like friends with David Beckham, which yes, honestly is potentially amazing because we could have a team that long term is literally just like a bunch of people who are friends with David Beckham.
David's son is in the Fort Lauderdale team, which is sort of the development team for Inter Miami, Romeo.
I love this. You know, I think that we need a team that has nothing but friends of David Beckham. I think that we should give Landon Donovan a team and do the same thing where it's just friends of Landon Donovan. Yeah, I support this. I think that that's the perfect thing for this league. So yeah, he's annoying. He's never been that good. His brother was a lot better. But yeah, no, I don't think he's a particularly good coach. And I think some of these results kind of show that a little bit. So,
well, who are we concerned with? I remember early in the year we were commenting together that Gonzalo seemed like he had already retired. It was just spending a few hours a week on grass, sort of jogging around. He's their top scorer by far with 10 goals in the year. I know Alex, he's a guy that you followed. What do you think? There must be something left in the tank.
Yeah, I mean, Gonzalo Higuain was a talented player. I mean, Gonzalo Higuain, even in like half retired, like, you know, fat Gonzalo phase, can still bang in goals in Major League Soccer. I've been saying this for years. Like, people always are like, oh, why do we want these like old, you know, washed up European stars over here? You know, Robbie Keane was garbage in England and comes over here and is like, what, one of the best strikers ever in the league. So, I mean, like, I think you can have a guy who is a good finisher, who's, you know, talented European pedigree player, comes over here, just, you know, totally, you know, phones it in. You know, Gonzalo Higuain could smoke half a pack of cigarettes on the pitch, you know, while drunk before a game and still score against half the team.
We're not saying that he does that.
I'm not saying he does that. I'm saying he could do that and he would still be like fifth in goals for the league. So,
gotcha.
You know, I think it's fine. He's going to be a dangerous player. He's had some rough patches. There have been a couple moments where he's kind of gotten memed on Twitter a little bit because he gets like spun by, you know, a rookie or something like that. And everybody's like, oh, look at Gonzalo Higuain. He doesn't care. This is he's a Miami vacation for him. He's getting paid to sit on a beach 5 days a week. But yeah, he's a dangerous player. The person who scares me is Federico Higuain, because I just feel like if he's going to have a moment, it's going to be against the Crew and it's going to permanently break my heart in like a way that will take me years to get over. Right.
Well,
it's like when you see your ex-girlfriend with somebody, right? You're like, oh, right.
Yeah. You know, I think he's going to get a lot of love from the supporters. Right. Ori? Yeah. And I'm wondering, I haven't really seen much of Miami this year. Well, what does he have left at age 36? Has he had a decent season? Is there nothing left?
All I got to say is Eloy Room or Evan Bush better not step outside of like the 6-yard box or he'll probably chip them.
If he chips the Crew keeper, I don't know if I will ever recover from that. Like, I might have to become a golf fan at that point, or, you know, tennis, or pick a different sport, bocce ball, something.
Bocce's good. Bocce's really fun.
It's not on television, though, but I'd watch
it. It is not on television. You probably will have to find a niche channel to watch
bocce. Cricket. ESPN, awesome. The Ocho.
There we go. There we go.
There's a dedicated cricket channel that showed up on Spectrum called Willow. I watched the Cricket World Cup on there.
Yep.
Best decision
I'm going to awesome. Quit this what? Podcast for the cricket report, and I'll have to figure something else out. No, but in all seriousness, I love Federico Higuain. Maybe my all-time favorite crew player. And I miss him like crazy. It shouldn't have ended the way that it ended for him in Columbus. And to see him in another shirt is going to suck. I hope he does well. I hope he comes over to Nordeca after the game and kind of gives a round of applause, because I can promise you I will try to start the Higuain chant, and I can promise you that 95% of people will join in with it. And so, yeah, it'll be good to see him back.
And I know he will love it too. Yep. Ori, you think they start him?
Maybe. We have to see. It's possible that Phil Neville maybe doesn't, because he probably wants to put maybe his top 11 out there. Federico hasn't really gotten too many starts for Miami. I mean, let's just take a quick look at his statistics here. Rodolfo Pizarro is kind of the player that you see as more of the number 10 creative player in that role. Mm-hmm. Federico Higuain has gotten some appearances this season, but he's obviously not like their top player. He's played in 20 games, 1 goal, 3 assists this season.
16, he's come on as a sub.
Yeah, so he started 4 games. He hasn't started since, let's double check here, like he's only played 21 minutes combined in the last 2 games, 35 minutes against Toronto, didn't play against the Crew. He hasn't started since, I think, July 31st. That's the last time he played more than 45 minutes in a game. Yeah. So
I think he'll play even as a sub.
Yeah, he'll play. Phil Neville will have to put him in as a sub. He needs to get an ovation of something. I hope they prepare some sort of small tribute towards him. And obviously, it won't be like Tom Brady level, because everybody watching that football game, Patriots, Buccaneers, all they talked about was Tom Brady was a Patriots player. Did you guys know Tom Brady played for the Patriots? So, but it'll be fun to see Federico back in Columbus.
Who's Tom Brady?
Oh, Tom Never Brady. Never heard of him. He's a guy. He's in Subway commercials.
He's a guy who's worse at his sport than Pipa is at his sport. How about that?
There you go. Okay.
Love but, that, but man. Pipa.
It's crazy. Bring it's crazy back. To kind of see the journey of Pipa since he left the Crew. You know, he signed with, I remember him, he signed with DC United in February of 2020. That was the first graphic I ever made on the Massive Report Instagram. He played for DC and scored, I think, 2 goals and MLS is back. And then he goes to Miami to play with his brother. And he's been away from the Crew for nearly 2 full seasons. And this is the first time he's back in Columbus to play against the Crew. Yeah.
You know, you know what I'm going to start as soon as the off season hits, right? If we don't make the playoffs, people are going to be saying, Porter out. You know what I'm going to be saying? Play your coach. He can sub himself in the 80th minute, bang in a free kick. Are you kidding me? Sign me up.
When is Pipa going to kick a free kick when Lucas Zelarayán is on the team?
Right.
Oh, you're telling me you're taking. Oh no, I'll take Pipa over Lucas. That's a good Twitter debate. At Master Report, let us know.
Lucas. Raise the stakes. Pipa, Lucas, or Guillermo.
I'm going Pipa, dude. I'm going Pipa.
Free kick taker in Crew history.
I don't think I take Guillermo over either of them. I think Guillermo is a great free kick taker, but I think he's a level below both of them. I think Guillermo is probably a better passer than either of them. But I think free kicks, I'll take Pipa all day.
All right. Recency bias has me thinking Lucas, but. Yeah, I think it's a good debate. Those three, of course, the three best central attacking midfielders in Crew history.
Put that up on Twitter. We'll see what happens. Make your pick now. So anything else about Miami that we should be concerned about? They employ Breck Shea. That's a guy that we've seen for years.
Yeah, Breck Shea played against the Crew in Florida. Yeah. That was funny. So, but yeah, this is a game where the Crew have to come out intense. They got to get this win. Keep up this good streak at home. You know, they beat Montreal at home in their last MLS game there, beating Cruz Azul to win Campeones Cup. I think they've been unbeaten at home since the Seattle loss, winning all those games, I believe, at home. So you have to keep up that momentum.
If well, they... it's it's pretty simple. They just have to win the rest of their games. That's it.
Yeah, I would say win all four of your home games and try and nick a minimum two points from your last two road games in Nashville and in DC. But if they lose one or drop points in one of their last four home games, I don't think there's no way they make the playoffs in my
eyes. I agree. All right, well, let's make our picks for Miami. And then I have a couple other points of order, and then we'll wrap this up, okay? Let's go to you first, Sam. Crew in Miami.
So I have this debate occasionally where, like, it's like, come on, can we just put this season out of its misery and just lose the game? But it's at home, and it's Miami, and it's against the Higuain brothers. So I'm going to pick that the Crew will win, again, 2-1.
2-1. All right. All right.
I think it's going to end same as the U.S. Costa Rica game, 1-0 Crew. I see the attack getting a goal in the second half in this one. I think both teams are going to come out really energetic after this break that they've had. I think Miami played last weekend, though, but Columbus 2 weeks off. We remember what it was like last year when they had a lot of time off to prepare. They came out guns blazing. I think they do the same here against Miami. If they don't, then the season seems all but lost at that point. But I think the Crew come out with the home win, 1-0. I think it's way Caleb Porter and all the players know how crucial it is that they win the rest of their home games. They have to play the way that they've done in their best games this season for the rest of the season. So they win 1-0.
Alex?
I think it's going to be 1-1. And I hope that Higuain does not score. Either Higuain does not score. Although it would be a nice moment if Pipa scored and then he didn't celebrate, but I still hope that does not happen. But I just don't like Kamara style. That's right. I just don't know if the Crew believe that they can make the playoffs at this point. Like I'm going to be very curious to see from like their body language. Do they look like a team that's still hungry, or do they look like a team that kind of knows that the season's winding down and that they're not going to be part of the postseason? It'll be interesting to see what happens, but I don't think they have enough to get by Miami at this point. 1-1.
Well, I don't know. I really think that this game they've got their blinders on, because really you get a win here and things break one way or the other. The East is so packed up behind New England that there are a whole range of outcomes here. So, and the fact that Miami hasn't looked particularly good of late, I'm going to take the Crew 3-1. That's what I'm going to do. And sure, I'll give Pipa the lone Miami goal late. So that's what I got. 3-1. Did anyone watch Lucas play for Armenia on Friday? I was I had a work function that I had to attend. I was unable to watch any of the match. Did Ori?
Did you? I got a bit of the highlights. Obviously, a lot of World Cup qualifiers happening, so I try to keep myself occupied with as many as I can just to sort of see what's going on. But Lucas El Rayan gets an assist in his first ever international cap. First game for Armenia, gets an assist against Iceland, but they tie the game 1-1. And then Armenia lost to Romania in Bucharest 1-0. Zelarayan played the entire second half off the bench. So not the greatest showing for Armenia here in this qualification stage. Germany has won their group. Three teams have qualified for the World Cup officially. Qatar, Germany, and Denmark, who is perfect in Europe right now. Wow. They've won all eight of their games. An amazing run it's been for Denmark. Semifinals in Euro, third team to make it to the World Cup. So they're flying on cloud nine right now. But Armenia can still finish in second place. Lucas El Rayan and the rest of the Armenian team are going to need some very good performances in November in order to get that playoff spot. And then Jonathan Mensah in Ghana had a wonderful window, two wins against Zimbabwe. Mensah played all 180 possible minutes in those two games. And Ghana is right there with South Africa at the top of their group. They're going to be playing South Africa in November, essentially, for the group. You have to win your group in this current stage in African qualifying in order to make the final stage to determine the five teams that make it into the World Cup. Sam's Egypt is right in that battle with Libya in their group, but some teams have been clinching spots, Senegal, Morocco, who are two of the best teams in the region. So Jonathan Mensah, Iron Horse, plays every minute for Ghana, helps keep a clean sheet on Tuesday. And I would expect him to be back with Ghana in November. I would expect probably the same five, maybe four. I don't know if Jossie Zardes is with the U.S. in November, but at the very least, Liam Fraser should be with Canada. Diaz should probably be with Costa Rica. Mensah should be with Ghana. And Zellerion should be with Armenia in November for the next international
break. I can almost guarantee you that Jonathan will be with Ghana because they are the like three of their five center backs are hurt.
Right. Wow.
So that's based on some conversations with some of my Ghanaian coworkers. So
yeah, if any countries that crew players play on internationally are going to make the World Cup, I think Jonathan Mensah probably has the best guarantee of playing in the World Cup. I think Liam Fraser would absolutely be on the Canada squad if they qualified. Jossie Zardes on the U.S. is obviously up for debate because most teams take three strikers, and whether he's in that top three is to be seen. We have to see how the rest of it plays out. Armenia, I think, is a long shot to make it. Zellerion would be on that squad too. And then if Costa Rica somehow pull through, then maybe Luis Diaz gets in there. But one person I think for the crew that would be interesting to see when they get their senior appearances for their country is Alexandru Matan. He's been a part of the Romanian youth system for a very long time. I think if he gets some more minutes for the crew at the end of the season and starting in 2022, he might get an appearance for Romania down the road.
And Ori, I know you watch Israel with great interest. I see the third. Any chance?
Probably not. Heartbreaking loss in Scotland. Scott McTominay scored a last second goal on a corner kick for Israel to lose 3-2. So Israel's chances are pretty slim. They need to win out and they need Scotland to lose twice in November in order to make the playoffs, since Denmark won their group and that's confirmed. But other stuff to watch for international November. Portugal and Spain are not guaranteed to win their groups. Italy isn't either. They both have big matches in November in order to try and automatically qualify for Qatar. Stuff in Asia is getting interesting too. Japan just beat Australia to break a world record 11 match World Cup qualifying winning streak for the Socceroos. So Oceania still hasn't been playing. I don't know what's going on there.
Well, I think they're done.
No, like they're
just sitting around waiting.
They're sitting around waiting. We're still waiting to see who will make that intercontinental, which we all know is going to be New Zealand. Time New Zealand didn't win that anything was when Tahiti made the Confederations Cup a decade ago and lost to Spain 10-0. For anyone who's listening to the podcast, can you even identify Tahiti on a map? It's probably too small to find.
Yeah, that is always an interesting group. And, you know, New Zealand from time to time can be somewhat competitive. So we'll see.
Hey, right. Undefeated in South Africa in 2010, New Zealand. They're the fake winners of that World Cup.
Yeah. I do remember that now that you mentioned it.
Yeah, they drew Italy, Paraguay, and Slovakia.
Yeah.
Every World Cup, I always point out like a fake winner. The USA fake won the World Cup in 2006 because they were the only team not to lose to Italy. They tied Italy in 2006.
Point.
So we won the World Cup in 2006.
I'll take it. All right. Anything else we should know about? Is Room going to be back on Saturday?
I would think.
All right. Just checking. Very good. All right. Well, let's wrap it up then. The crew in Miami on Saturday. I will be out of town next week, so you guys will have to figure it all out. I'm sure you'll do just fine without me. I'm going to try to watch on my phone up there in the state of Washington on Saturday, and we'll see what happens. We need to thank our fine sponsor, Ori.
Yeah, we got to thank Saucy Brew Works. Best bar in Columbus, place to be in the world, Saucy Brew Works. If your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Let's get close to the mic there. 443 West 3rd Avenue. Go there. Have fun. Have food. Have drinks. Be responsible and have a good time.
Sounds good.
Ori's really pushing the limits of his new microphone.
Yes, I have a new microphone. If I sound better, let me know. 5 stars in the comments, everybody. Thank you.
Like and subscribe.
Sounds way worse than when you're
microphone. Well, don't get so close.
Jeez Louise.
Jeez Louise.
All right, for Alex Sennick, for Ori Benatar, for Sam Fondi, my name is Brian Phillips. Listen to my station, CD92.9. And some assemblage of this group will talk to you next week on the Massive Report Podcast.